Hey, Get Your Fresh Bizcast here. I'm DC Dennison. This week we've got a special summer doubleheader. First, we eavesdrop on Globe reporter Rob Weissman as he interviews the dean of MIT's Sloan School of Management, Richard Schmalensee. Then Ross Kerber talks about Sepracor's new sleeping pill, Lunesta. You'll learn a few things that have been left out of their new ad campaign. First up, Robert Weissman.
Well, Dean Schmalensee, are applications to Sloan rising or falling?
Applications to Sloan are down just a little bit this year, I think around 4%. Applications industry-wide, I think, are down a little more than that, but the numbers aren't very firm.
Why have they been falling industry-wide?
There are a number of things going on. First, demographics. It's a smaller cohort. Second, people tend to apply to fewer schools than they used to in the past. And third, I think there has been a turn away from business.
Sloan established a center for e-business in 1999 and focused the curriculum more on the internet. Is that center still up and running? And is your new center for biomedical innovation part of a broader shift toward life sciences?
The center for e-business is up and running. And of course, e-business is of less interest on its own than simply a part of the strategy of many large and small firms. We are not shifting away from the internet because I think its impact has yet to be fully felt, but we are trying to respond to the rise in life science-based industries, particularly, frankly, in our own backyard. One can throw a stone from our parking lot and hit a large number of bioscience-based firms.
And critics like Henry Mintzberg have said that business schools are teaching the wrong things and that you could learn more about business in the workplace than in the classrooms. Are such criticisms gaining traction within the business schools? Are the business schools starting to think more about emphasizing the practice of management?
Criticisms by Mintzberg and others have really suggested that business schools have become too academic in some sense. Those criticisms are being taken seriously, but I think the answer is probably not to retreat from teaching rigorous methods and business analysis, but to try to think how to complement that with practical experience and to increase students' ability to manage as well as to analyze.
You took some criticism for rejecting the 32 Sloan applicants who hacked into their files last winter to see if they had been accepted. Is this still an issue at the Sloan campus today, and can you foresee accepting any of those applicants in the future?
Well, let me deal with the last part first. Yes, of course we can, and we said so at the time. We would consider accepting them, and without a particularly large black mark. It was much more a story away from the Sloan campus than on the Sloan campus. People in computer science, for instance, tended to think I had acted too harshly. I believed and still believe that not to have acted at all in the current climate of concern about ethics would have been inappropriate. So it isn't talked about much except off campus.
About 5 years ago, you appeared as a Microsoft lead economic witness, I believe, in the antitrust trial. What do you see, looking in hindsight, as the lasting impacts from that case?
I think the way Microsoft thinks of itself and the way Microsoft behaves in the marketplace and in dealing with the government has changed. I think the company has matured. I think the case itself hasn't had a huge impact on the marketplace, in part because the acts that Microsoft was found to have done didn't themselves have that much of an impact. So correcting them was unlikely to change the marketplace much.
Do you see any new directions for Sloan under the MIT's new president, Susan Hockfield?
President Hockfield is very interested in having MIT play a leadership role broadly in all that it does. And thus, she's interested, as we are, in MIT Sloan's playing a leadership role in changing, advancing management education. she's certainly sympathetic to our growing interest in life science-based industries. But we were moving in that direction before she was named.
And are you, in general, doing a rethinking now some of your curricula or direction of the business school more generally?
We're having a broad conversation on campus on not just what the MBA curriculum should be, but what should our product line be, so to speak? What kinds of offerings should we provide? One of the arguments that Mintzberg makes, for instance, is that management is best taught to older students. If accepted, that has implications for what you teach when. And we're trying to think through these and other issues.
What are the fields that your students are gravitating toward now? Are they what sectors of the economy? What are they more interested in? International, working internationally, or?
Well, we have something like 20% of our students taking jobs outside the U.S. I think that's the right number. That has grown a bit over time. We also see more interest, not surprisingly, in life science-based industries, and more interest in nonprofit and social enterprises. These are not huge numbers, the latter two, but they are clearly growing.
20% take their first job outside the U.S.? Or 20% participate in your global...
After graduation.
Yeah, first job outside the U.S.
That's
That may be related to our Global Entrepreneurship Lab. About 20% of recent classes have had an experience in a small enterprise outside the U.S. as part of the Sloan curriculum.
I understand that with the retirement of Dean Clark at Harvard, you're now the senior member of a group of seven business school deans that meets regularly. What's the name of that group, and what do you talk about at your meetings?
We don't fix prices. We don't actually have a name internally other than the seven deans. I'm told in certain chat rooms it's referred to as the B7, but we've never called ourselves that. We discuss problems of common concern. How do you teach ethics effectively? How do you engage alumni productively? What's the role of print publication with alumni as opposed to online communication with alumni? Do you see changes in student attitudes and cultures and so forth?
Great. Thank you, Dean Schwalensee.
Thank you.
Ross Kerber, you just wrote a story about a local biotech company and their advertising campaign for their new sleeping pill drug. What was significant about that?
That's right, DC. I just wrote a story about Sepracor's new sleeping pill, Lunesta, which is a drug that's the latest entry into what's going to become a pretty crowded market for sleeping pills.
I've seen the ads everywhere.
The ads are pretty popular. You see them in print. You see them on TV. They have a website, www.lunesta.com.
It's the moth, right? You see the moth. That's their thing.
I thought it was a butterfly. Everybody I talked to thought it was a butterfly, and I did some surfing and Googling, and it looks a lot more like the Luna moth, which is a creature that's very graceful, and it comes out mainly at night. It's sort of nocturnal. It may be meant ironically, but the ads on television show this creature lulling a bunch of restless sleepers to sleep. So it looks pretty effective going into it. What I came across are a batch of psychiatrists who were starting to criticize the ads as sort of overstepping the medical literature that underpins the drug or overstepping the conclusions of some of the studies.
So if I'm seeing all these ads, what were they questioning?
Well, I'll take it from the top of what I wrote in my story, but the I would say the probably the most controversial thing is the ads are claiming that Lunesta is, quote, the first and only prescription sleep aid approved for long-term use, end quote. Now, some people I spoke to say that's, one person used the phrase, a little bit misleading, if I remember it right, because if you look at the indication section of the drug's label, it says that it is indicated for the treatment of insomnia. Now, it doesn't have the word long-term in the label, in that section. What it does... What it also doesn't have is some earlier sleeping pills like Ambien say that they are for the treatment of, for the short-term treatment of insomnia.
I see.
Lunesta's distinct because they did do a six-month study, and so the FDA was satisfied that, Lunesta didn't need to carry the warning against long-term use. But there's still a lot of concern about, are sleeping pills safe to use long-term?
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing you always hear is, you know, there is no long-term drug solution. It's got to be like behavioral modification, that kind of thing.
That's exactly right. Or that's sort of a there's a debate within the sleeping medical professions about that. So there's some the concern I was hearing from psychiatrists is it's going too far to say this is approved for long-term use. They might have used a different phrasing. I talked to another sleep specialist, though, at Hopkins. I'm going to read what he said in the story. He said, well, the FDA probably said it was okay for them to say it this way because, quote, it's not deeply misleading. The FDA has said that there's not a time restriction, so it's an easy interpretation.
Wow, that's a lot of leeway.
It's
not deeply misleading.
You know, the FDA wouldn't speak about a specific company's drug literature or drug campaign in this case. The company says to me, well, they did have the FDA review these ads before they started airing. So I guess that's a defense, or I guess it puts the ball also in the court of the FDA. Why is this okay?
Yes, right.
Right. So it's part of this broader debate about, you know, direct-to-consumer advertising. How much can the public be expected to know about the medical literature before something goes on the market, and, you know, to what extent is the FDA requiring companies to say enough mm-hmm. about the literature that underpins their products?
One thing that struck me reading your story, are you technically an insomniac if you take more than 30 minutes to fall asleep?
There's not one technical definition of insomnia, but that's a pretty commonly used definition.
Wow.
Is taking more than 30 minutes to fall asleep. There's also a lot of discussion about how waking up in the middle of the night and how much total sleep you get.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of people who say, you know, just start with behavior therapy. Make sure you get up at the same time every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Use the bed. Only for sleeping and sex, but don't like hang out in bed reading.
Yeah.
You know, don't watch TV in bed.
Yeah.
Tips like that.
Yeah.
So you know.
Well, I noticed you referenced a journal sleep in your story a few times. What's it like to read the journal sleep?
Well, I suppose if you read it just before going to bed, that might have the intended effect. But you know, it's a serious medical journal, and they do. You know, there have been exchanges in this journal. Between some of the people I quoted in my story, Greg Jacobs at Harvard, Daniel Kripke at UCSD, and people representing Sepracor,
mm-hmm.
the company, about, you know, one of them raised the possibility that Sepracor was picking and choosing which studies it was using to get this drug approved. The scientists working with Sepracor seriously denied that. And said, no, you know, we're going through the right steps here, and the mm-hmm. FDA did approve this. The FDA cleared this for marketing earlier this year, and it's coming to market at a time when you got a pretty crowded field. You got this, you got Ambience is the market leader from Sanofi, Aventis, Sonata out there, and then you got a batch of new sleeping pills that are expected to come to market. There's another one that was just approved from Takeda Pharmaceuticals. That is seen as sort of a less powerful medicine, but still might be useful to get people to fall asleep. And then Pfizer's got one. There's going to be a longer-term acting version of Ambien coming out. So this is definitely an area where there's going to be a lot of attention going forward.
You also referenced that Frist in the Senate is sort of saying he wants there to be some kind of moratorium. Are we going to see any kind of active legislation or at some point, will there be, you know, these ads be reined in, do you think?
You know, I'm not a political reporter, but there's definitely going to be a debate that's going to cite ads like this and argue that there either ought to be less direct-to-consumer advertising or a more transparent process to say, this is why we allowed these ads to say what they said, and here's the medical case for it and against it.
Yeah, yeah, great. Hey, Ross Kerber, thank you.
Thank you, DC.
Thanks for listening, and check in next Wednesday for a brand new BizCast. Or better yet, subscribe and have BizCast automatically delivered to your computer and MP3 player.